Welcome to Kidlit Happy Hour. Grab a drink, cozy up,
and explore storytelling with creative minds inside children's publishing and beyond.
How are you, Caroline? Oh, I miss you.
I miss you so much. I'm just going.
Let's talk about your phone.
Oh, is that how we're going to start this?
Yeah, we're going to start there. I'm just going to put you on blast right now.
Okay, so we rented an RV. We piled the four kids in said RV. And amazing. We hit the road to Nashville to visit family. And on said road trip around, 1 a.m., I'm sitting in the passenger seat and Tuffy's like, babe, you got to go to sleep so that you can take over from me here in a few hours. I'm like, you got it. And I go unbuckle my seatbelt, grab my pillow that was on my lap, go to turn to the back of the RV. Little did I know, the pillowcase is wrapped around the door handle. I pull the pillow. The door goes flying open. We are 70 miles per hour on a highway. An RV. Oh, and of course it opens. I probably for like 1.5 seconds, but just long enough for my phone to go flying out of the car. Phone with license, credit card, and debit card, naturally. Which became like a comedy of errors throughout the rest of the night, including a state trooper meeting us right at an exit, me jumping in his car, him telling me like, don't mind if I take a leak real quick. So I'm inside state trooper's truck while he's peeing. And then he hops back in. We go look for this phone. His name's Trooper Adams. Trooper Adams, if you're listening, sir.
Thank you. Thank you. I'm sure he
is. Thank you for finding my debit card and the rest of my phone smashed on the median. But all to say.
Oh, he did find it smashed?
I mean, we saw a crushed case. Like, there was no hope. It was truly 2 a.m. on an interstate highway.
When I get a text, it's like 11 o'clock, and it was a picture of you and Tavita in the car, and then a video of the state trooper hunting around. It's a text from Tavita's phone, like, just so you know, I won't be texting you, and this is what happened, so don't panic if you don't hear from me.
Oh, I've been so delirious, but that was like 3 days ago. If anyone who's listening has tried to reach me via phone, I'm so sorry, but the messages are all gone, and I'll get one in a few days. All to say that that really was a funny way to start the week. And I feel like, Joe, you have so much to update on.
Oh, okay. Today, I had the amazing opportunity to be on a panel at the Asian Women Are Strong, beautiful event at the Ferry Building in San Francisco. So many highlights. It's just a constant reminder of being in community. It was like this beautiful event. There were vendors, there were dances and performances, there were amazing panels with just amazing Asian women who are doing unreal world-changing things. And so seeing friends that were there, some who've been on the podcast, like Michelle Lee, who flew out here from St. Louis. So that was super fun. And seeing other folks like Gia and Christy Mee, who, and just connecting and having conversations. That was really amazing. I will say that my fangirl highlight moment is Helen Zia was speaking, and she was the keynote conversation. But because it was just one panel at a time, we were all able to just watch each other's panels, which was so cool. So Helen Zia was in a room watching me speak, and I almost died. So before that happened, I came in a little late for the first panel, and I knew she was sitting in this, all those speakers were sitting in sort of the front row, and I could tell that she was in my row, like two seats down from me, and I was freaking the F out. And then after the panel was over, which was amazing, the daughter of Vicha, who was the Thai elderly gentleman who was murdered in the Bay Area, and she started a nonprofit, and she was speaking. I mean, there was just so many incredible stories. And so after that panel, I like fangirled all over Helen and was like, hi, I'm Joanna. Thank you so much for all you've done. And blah, blah, blah. Like, I was just barfing all over her. And I have a book, and like, you're in the back matter of my book. And I'm like, you know, I'd love to share my book with you, like that kind of thing where it's like, okay, lady, like back off. But she was in the room for my panel. And afterwards, she was so kind. I was in signing books, and she came up and said some nice things about the panel and things I'd said, and I almost died on the floor. That was my highlight. That was the highlight. Like, Helen Zia said nothing nice to me. But I also think that it was really powerful to hear her speak. And I think this is something I would love to unpack for much longer. But for so many reasons, I think people in my generation who are, there are so many more people speaking up and doing these things within the Asian community. But if you're in an immigrant family, our parental generation is often a generation that came over and taught and were like, keep your heads down. The racism is so bad. You just got to stay alive and survive. But Helen is of this generation. She's 72 years old. She's a freaking badass.
Yeah.
And it was so amazing to hear from someone from my community who has been doing the work of activism and liberation and justice for decades. Yes. And to learn from like an OG in the work, you know, because I don't know that that's ever happened. Like right. I've studied them.
Right.
I've read about them, right. but I've never sat and just soaked in this wisdom of so many years of seeing so many of someone who's been part of, who's led so many movements. And I was just like big eyes, smiley the whole time, just feeling so inspired. One thing I'll share that's relevant to this podcast is just one thing she said was talking about how we are meant to try to be our whole like human, like we're all whole humans and we're working toward a world that will, she said it way more beautifully, but the idea is that where we can be our whole self everywhere we go in the world, and that we have to demand that and we have to insist on that. Yes. And I've been in a space creatively where I've really been questioning whether I can financially make it happen to save money for my kids' college and to have a life for my kids. And can I do that? And hearing her say that was really this affirmation of like right now at this space in my life with the work that I'm involved in, I feel really integrated. Like I don't feel like I have to compartmentalize all the different things and identities and parts of who I am. They're all sort of all in one space, mommying, authoring, speaking, like all the things. And so it just felt like a sign almost of, no, this is, you are your most integrated self right now. If I go get a job back in a school full time so that I can make more money, I will have to recompartmentalize in ways that won't be healthy for me as a human. So I don't know how that plays out. Yes. It feels irresponsible financially maybe, but it just felt like a really great affirmation of like, keep going on this path and, you know, something will work out. And if not, then you can go compartmentalize yourself later if you get really desperate. But I think that was a beautiful realization for me that I needed. That was a lot. Thank you for listening.
No, I'm so buzzy hearing you talk about this because I feel like the way you're describing the integration of all of yourselves is, and you've heard me say this to you, but is truly the top of the mountain and is such a far cry from where you were feeling even just 1-2 years ago. Yeah. What is more beautiful than being able to look at your full self, your full life, look across the horizon of all the things you're passionate about and say like, no, I'm showing up for all these things every day.
Yeah.
And I feel like you do sacrifice so much to be able to make it through a day with putting food on the plate and all that, and to be able to pull up and say, oh, what's more worthy of that than this work? So I love that tonight felt like a validation. I love that you got to be amongst a hero and that they wanted to talk and hug you, which but the fact that you're seeing that, and also what you were sharing to me offline about how Helen and the woman that was leading the conversation with her, how much joy there was between the two of them and how much support, mutual support. And it just sounds like
for decades long.
Yes. Yeah. But all these spaces you're in, are people just like lifting each other up, standing on shoulders of giants, supporting each other vocally, like voraciously saying like you, let's go together in community. And it's just so, it's beautiful. It's
so beautiful to see these two older women, gorgeous women. Yeah. I mean, like speak this language that I feel like of the things that I care about in the world. And I just have not seen that.
Yeah.
Again, it just, it's really was like this huge core memory kind of moment. So that felt really awesome. Anyways, we can cut a lot of that.
We're not cutting a word. We're not cutting a damn word. I'm in charge of editing this episode. See ya.
Barf. Okay. The other things I was going to share are, if you have not joined Authors Against Book Bans, I feel like that's something I'm really proud to be a part of. Caroline, too, is a regional leader. And if you haven't joined that yet, please join. It's for all authors.
Who can join, Joanna? Who?
If you're an author, if you have written a book, if you have a deal on the way, if you're self-published or you're published, no matter what you write, genres, age levels, adult, kid, like all authors, this book banning is happening and it's so scary. It's all over the country. Yeah. It's everywhere. And if you want to do something to try to fight it, please. There are so many organizations, Authors Against Book Bans. It's like the author arm of, and we will partner with so many different other organizations. And essentially it's a space for us to be able to rally ourselves whenever there's something that's needed within our states and our communities. We'll be the go-to org for folks to say, hey, we need some authors to come speak, or hey, could someone help write letters to this school board or this legislature or X, Y, and Z? if that sounds like something you just want to support, yes, please join. We can drop a link for that in our show notes. There's also a letter that's an anti-book banning letter that will go out. We will vet the different places that ask for this letter, but there are, it's like 600 plus signatures on it already. Authors Against Book Bans is over 1,000 strong already. So I just wanted to put a plug in for that, because for all of us who care about storytelling, yes, who care about community, you know, we need your voice.
And I feel like this is one of those issues. There are too many to count at this point right now in the world that feels, yeah, so big and so hairy and so pernicious. Like it's, mm-hmm, happening and there's no way that we as individuals can make a difference. And that's when we organize. That's when we have to, if there's ever a place for hope. To me,
yeah,
this is one of the few places I felt hopeful to see authors coming, yes, together and collectively finding ways to make a real dent. And so, yeah, if you're feeling any bit of that helplessness, please, please, please sign your name. Reach out to everyone in your world that's connected to Kidlit,
yeah,
and just pile on, see how you can get involved. If anyone's in the Virginia area, reach out to me directly, please.
It's making a difference, even though we're just getting up and, yeah, running and organized. It's on our Instagram account. If you want to follow that, we'll have very quick updates there for wins and needs and actions and quotes. But it's Authors Against Book Bans is the handle on Instagram. But one thing we shared on there was LaGrange ISD. Previously, there were 4 challenge books and authors wrote in and they spoke up and community members rallied and the school board ended up approving the purchase of all of those books. So it is moving the needle. We just need more people and we need to get more organized. Please sign up.
Yes.
Okay. You want to tell us about this episode and then we'll shut off this, yes, very long intro.
This is a very long intro, but I actually do want to say something that I wasn't going to say, okay, but cool, yeah, you were just talking about integrating everything in your life and that inspired me. Yeah. You're going to share just about a horrible loss in our family a few weeks ago. Actually, the night before the first event I did for Where's Poppy, we found out that my aunt Melanie, that my aunt Melanie, hold on, we'll cut that part. Hold on.
No, we don't need to cut it. Yeah. I love you.
That my aunt Melanie, who's my dad's sister, died of a brain aneurysm. And we were all just together the week before at my grandmother's headstone unveiling. And to say it was a shock is putting it very, very lightly. She was a heartbeat for my family, the sparkliest person I know. And from the book, Where is Poppy, that just came out, she is my Poppy's daughter. My Poppy's name is Mel, and she is Mel, named after him. And it's all been a wildly horrifying and surreal loss. So in the world of processing that right now and feeling that duality of deep, deep, deep sadness and so much gratitude that I got to be in her orbit for this long. So just wanted to share that because she is wonderful. Melanie Cuse, and if anyone wants to look her up and get to feel some of her shine, her obituary's out. And anyway, that's where my heart and head has been. That's the thing about this book world is that you plan for these books over the course of, 2 to 5 years between when you write a book and it comes out in the world, and you've just completely forgotten the book even exists over the past 2 weeks. So anyway, that's the honest update about how things have been in my world. And
thank you for sharing. I know you were unsure about whether you're going to share, but I'm so glad you did. And I know you haven't thought about it, but I just think that Where's Poppy has just so much more meaning with what the book is about and how people we love live on in all of our memories and all the things. I feel so painful that that's what was happening when you were trying to celebrate. And again, it's always come back to the stories we're writing, mm-hmm, and the things that we're doing matter. Mm-hmm. And that's the integration, even though it's so painful. Mm-hmm. That's a gift that you've given to your family.
It's a beautiful thing.
I love you so much.
I love you.
Anyways, I just love you. I'm so sorry. And this episode with Andrea is brilliant. She's so brilliant. And there's so much stuff that I just have a visual of all the things she shared. And one thing it comes back to again is this idea of community, yes, and storytelling being beyond just the craft.
Yes.
There's a level of trust and relationship needed. And so I can't wait to dive into that and, yes, for you all to listen.
Enjoy.
Anyways, enjoy. Hey, hooray. Happy to be here with you today.
Thank you both. I mean, I've been waiting for this magic moment.
So thank
it's
you.
Really, really thrilling.
For the record, for everyone, we have been emailing Andreas since probably like since the inception of the idea. Like,
yeah, like early summer.
Yeah. Before we had hardly any guests lined up, and we were like, we would love to have her on. And she was like, let me just take a second and see how this podcast really sounds.
I'll never turn down a happy hour. I will never turn down a moment to toast a happy hour. So I was really, really thrilled and excited. And here we are.
I think you were smart to do that, because when we had emailed you, we didn't know how to use our mics. We didn't know any of the recording equipment. I think it was a good call.
To wait a little. I love it.
It's a good call. But anyways, we're so thrilled you're here. So I'm going to jump in and I'm going to just share your bio. Okay. So Andrea Davis Pinkney is the New York Times bestselling and award-winning author of more than 50 books for children and adults. 50. Buckle up for her numerous, and I do mean very numerous awards, including multiple Coretta Scott King Book Awards, the Boston Globe Horn Book Honor, the Parenting Publications Gold Medal, among other citations. And I'm not done yet. She is a 4 NAACP Image Award nominee, recipient of both the Regina Medal. Oh, and the R. Okay. Help me pronounce this word.
I know. Say that 10 times fast. I can't even say it. Arbuthnot.
Arbuthnot. Okay. Excuse me. I should have practiced that earlier. Arbuthnot Honor Award for her singular body of work and distinguished contribution to the field of literature. What? She's also been inducted into the New York State Writers Hall of Fame.
Ugh.
She is also the subject of an Emmy-nominated film, Andrea Davis Pinkney National Author Engagement. And I'm still not done, so hold on. She has been named one of the 25 most influential people in our children's lives by Children's Health Magazine, among the Network Journal's 25 most influential Black women in business, and is one of the 50 over 50 extraordinary women and women who light up the art scene, noted by Good Housekeeping and Women's Day magazines. And
this is so wonderful.
Hey, on top of all that, she is also the acclaimed librettist for Houston Grand Opera's The Snowy Day. So her contributions to literature and the world go far beyond the books that you might know her for. And we're so, so lucky to have her with us today.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, I'm a busy bee over here. I'm a busy bee in Brooklyn, New York.
If you were at a real happy hour, it could be what you're drinking right now or what you would be drinking at said happy hour.
Okay. Well, let me just say, first of all, it's thrilling to be with both of you. And yes, it is a happy hour because I couldn't get much happier, you know, talking to you and talking to writers and the publishing community. And I will tell you that I am drinking now from my London teacup. Okay.
Yes.
My London teacup. And a friend, a fellow writer, we joke that we drink something called nothing tea. And nothing tea is like water with lemon in it, basically, which is very good for you. And the reason I love my London coffee mug is because that is my happy place. Mm. When you're stuck, get on a plane and go to the UK.
Why not?
So I drink the London mug here in New York City when I need a jolt.
What's your connection to London?
I was just going to ask.
Just love it. Yeah. Just love the town. It's the heart connection. Just love to be there.
What do you love about it? Because in my head, I'm like, rain. London.
Gray.
I love it. I don't think about the rain. You know, rain, you're being showered with blessings. Vibrant, it's cultural, it's theater.
Yeah.
It's a great walking set. Museums, something about it. I land down in Heathrow and I'm happy.
Like happy. So,
no, I want to go to London. What am I doing in Virginia?
Let's do it.
Let's go. Okay. Thank you again for being here. Hearing your bio and hearing all the magic you've sprinkled around the world, around Kidlit. I'm so thrilled to hear your take on this overarching question, which is, how do you polish a story? We'll stop there and just however you want to approach answering that question, we would love to soak it up.
Okay. You know, it's a good question. I had to think about it. Like, how do I polish a story? You know, it's a little bit counterintuitive. I don't know if you've ever heard the expression, don't just do something, sit there. I literally begin polishing by not doing anything. So I take a break. I walk away. I get away from that laptop and the polishing begins when I'm not working on something. Yeah. And what do I do during that time? I do other stuff. Usually when I'm at the stage of it needing a polish, I'm kind of frustrated, you know? So I've been known to go to Coney Island, go on the Cyclone roller coaster because I'm just like, like that's an appropriate place to let it out. Go to the Cyclone, get in that car, have it dip down, you know, So that's where the polishing begins. You know, doing something that's not writing.
I said this beautiful idea. It's like a writer's retreat at like Six Flags.
You got it.
Screams. You got that's it. Amazing.
The primal yell. In so doing and taking yourself away from the page, is it that you're finding clarity? Is it that you're finding a new beginning? What's the experience like for you? You know, what comes to you next after said scream on the cyclone?
Right. Okay. So the scream, you know, you get that adrenaline out. The reality is that you have to go back and polish because there's a deadline and you want to publish the book and you want to make it the best book ever. Once I've kind of done the loop-de-loop on the cyclone, I then come home and really dismantle the piece, whatever it is, if it's a picture book or a novel. And what I mean by that is this. I literally lay all the pages out, like on the floor. Mm. And it's almost like a mosaic or like a tapestry or salad bar. You know, I am literally looking at everything and I'm picking and choosing. Like, okay, that doesn't work. I put that over there. Like that. Let's keep it. I'm looking at all the pages. Like, you know, chapter one is really down here in chapter nine. So I try to bring it up. And it's a very tactile, hands-on, kinetic experience of stitching that book together in whatever way that comes to me. And so then I collect all the pages. And meanwhile, I've got a whole pile over there that didn't make it. They didn't make the cut. But we never delete, just come over there. And I am literally building that book, you know, stone by stone, tomato by tomato, if it's a salad bar. And then I reread it.
I'm so sorry to jump in. I'm gonna understand the visual. Like if it's a picture book, I'm like, okay, that's like 5 or 6 pages. But for a novel, this is hundreds of pages all over. Right. Like, where you lay it all out.
I do.
Okay, what I'm envisioning is you're moving things around, but are you also in real time editing on the page? Like while you're moving
things
around? Not yet.
No. So I'm first looking at the schematic, at the order of things. I lay everything out and then I go up on the steps. I have like a staircase and I'm looking at it from kind of top down. Sometimes I'll take a photo and I like kind of read that on my phone. And I'm like, you know, that opening and, that opening down there, like you got to move that up. And then I rearrange the pages and then I start a close up read, if you will.
I'm thinking about it from the perspective of the picture book form. What a visual way to engage a visual form. Thinking about how you might piece this together, I feel like that's such an unlock to imagine how the reader would engage or jump into the story too. That's so wild to think of it from the top. I love that.
Totally. Totally. Yeah. How would a kid, you know, experience this? And that's kind of the other thing I do is I read that manuscript aloud again and again and again. And then I kind of make my own audiobook. If you will, I record the reading of it and I'm like, how is this working as a read aloud?
Yeah.
You know, Andrea, you're kind of starting to doze off here, like from your own storytelling. So this section is a little slow, you know?
Yep.
I create a read aloud because that's what we ultimately want. We want kids to read aloud or read within the voices in their own minds and to stay with us.
My mind is
Yeah, I love that. I make my children listen to me read the same story over and over and over, but I haven't ever recorded myself to hear it. I'm looking for visual cues from them. I'm like, okay, when's he checking out? When's she doing a backward somersault? When are they over it? But I hadn't thought of listening for myself. Oh, that's beautiful. Sorry, Joe, were you going to say something?
I just say, I just have this experience because I've been on tour doing lots of read-alouds of new books that have come out. And I was telling Katya Chan, who is the illustrator for On the Tip of a Wave, I was telling her for one of my books, I'll read it out loud and I get bored while I'm reading it. And I'm realizing, oh gosh, but then this other one, I don't get bored. And I'm thinking, I read aloud in this way, like to hear how the words sound. But I think it's a shift to think about it as a read aloud.
Yep, as a whole piece.
Like the performance part of it a little bit. Mm-hmm. Anyways, that's just my like, man, I wish I had this advice. Like. Okay, so this visually is like, how does it sound? How does it look? We move the pages around. But when and how are you digging in to the like structural or the emotional character, you know, plot elements of like what needs to be clarified and layered and all that stuff?
So after we've gone to the cyclone, we've spread out the pages, we're going to read it out. Eventually, you have to get back to the laptop. Right. We have to get back to the words and the pages and the ordering of it. Right. And I go in very slowly. I take it bit by bit. You know, it is like the knitting of a sweater. I approach it very slowly. And I know that if I am feeling a sense of urgency about any aspect of it, in terms of revision and polishing, I really have to reel it back. Ooh. And that process is very slow. It's very methodical. And I take it in small chunks. Yeah. The other thing I'll just say about polishing is, it's almost like polishing your teeth in a way. Like, I can brush my teeth, but I can't do dental work on myself. I can't really get in there. I can't see it all. Yeah. And that's where our beautiful, glorious friends, writers groups, our own kids, of course, our editors kind of come in. So the polishing is very, very slow.
It sounds like you're describing the sense of urgency as like a red flag. Like when I'm feeling that urgency, I rein it in, I slow it down. What about that is making you pause? I can imagine some people would lean into a feeling of urgency, like, okay, maybe that's telling me where I need to focus. Can you talk us through that a bit?
I mean, I know for me that there's a couple things. Okay, so of course we want to create a sense of momentum mm-hmm. in the stories that we are writing. You know, we want to get that page turn. We want to bring that reader along. Mm-hmm. So that's a kind of urgency, but that's not the urgency of the craft. If I'm, you know, feeling just pressure around it, that's not my best. Like, you don't rush through yoga. You're not hyperventilating in yoga. You're feeling the postures. You're going in there. You're mindful. And that is an essential tool for my polishing process, is mindfulness. I can't rush that.
Just to dig in there a little more, like, what's the difference between the sense of urgency that you're describing that is actually withholding that mindful space that's needed to be creative? Versus not like a healthy pressure, but a healthy inspiration that's making you
energy.
Yeah. Like, how do you differentiate the two in your own practice? What does it feel like? How can you tell when you're in that space?
So for me, it's two things. It's the distinction between some kind of crafting tools that I've used and then the refining of that. So the crafting tool, one of them that I use, is the page one pat. Essentially, it is that I, the writer, and making a deal, a covenant, an agreement with that child. And it is incumbent on me to honor that pact starting on page one. And the pact is essentially, come on, kid, we're going on a journey. I'm reaching out a hand. I'm inviting you in. We are going on a journey together. And if I am honoring my end of the bargain, if I'm honoring the pact, you will agree, will come along, you will join me on the journey, you will stay with me to the end of the book because of what I've placed on page one. So that's craft work. And I do want to set up a sense of urgency and desire and momentum with that crafting tool. So that's the tool of it. What I try to work to achieve that pact, to honor it, to, you know, bring that reader along, is something that I call HPH, hook, pull, hold. So I'm doing three things. I'm hooking the reader, the kid. I'm reaching out a hand, or often the reluctant reader, I'm kind of yanking them by the turtleneck, if you will. And I'm hooking them and I'm pulling them along, you know, and then I'm embracing them in a hug. I'm holding them. So that's part of the pact. I'm going to hold you. I'm going to hug you. I'm going to embrace you. And we're going to be on this journey together. And you're going to feel so held and embraced and secure and warm and excited that you're going to come along. So that's the craft work. That's where the urgency comes in. But then again, the methodical kind of polishing of that is the slow assessment of, all right, am I hooking them? You know, am I honoring the pact? Do they want to stay on this journey? Well, when you listened last night to your self-made audio, you're not holding them anymore. You're in chapter four, but I think you're off in hinterlands here.
You're just starting to do it a bit, but do you have an example in your mind of how you may have come to this polish with the book that you have out? Something that you saw that wasn't fitting, or a way that you went back and adjusted to bring the sheen to life?
So an example would be a novel called The Red Pencil. So The Red Pencil is set in Sudan. It's about a 12-year-old Amira. It's 2004. The war has started and she has to leave her farm. I don't want to give too much away. And in the culture that she comes from, girls are dissuaded from going to school and learning to read. And more than anything, she wants to do those things. And She is given a red pencil in the course of this story, and everything changes for her. So with respect to the polishing, that was the basic outline or structure of the story. Sure. There was a lot of kind of setup and musing in the beginning. And it's written in verse, by the way. So there was a lot of setup for the world, the culture, the people. And that was just too slow. That was too slow. This child wants, she has a desire to do something. Mm. I finally concluded, like, a lot of this setup, Andrea, like, put it in the back matter. You know, give a back matter spread or two about the war in Darfur and Sudan and the culture and the statistics around girls, like, get into her heart and soul, get behind her eyes. And that was occurring around chapter 3 or 4. I was like, you got to move that up.
Yes.
Slice all that other stuff off, put it in the back.
So good.
What I'm hearing and saying is kind of like two things. One is just your own personal process, like an awareness of where you are. So we go from the scream to the very high level, just organization, to a real consciousness of when you feel like, oh, I have to hit deadline, for example, like I have an urgency internally about getting this thing done, and then pulling back and giving yourself the space to breathe and be intentional about how you are then building the urgency in the text and the connection with the reader and honoring that pact. That's such an interesting thing, because sometimes for me, I've been thinking like, oh, it's good when I feel that urgency, like I need to write. And when I'm not in that space, I'm feeling a little bit guilty that I'm not writing all the time. Mm-hmm. It's really beautiful actually to just think about honoring the slowness sometimes of what it
means
to be creative, and to be really intentional about how we are weaving these stories together. So I really love that. You mentioned earlier about how polishing often can't be done by ourselves. And you mentioned the critique partners and editors even, and friends who help. But I'm wondering if you can speak more just about what qualities in a critique group or in a person or whatever is helpful for you now. What's helpful for you in what you have found?
So I have what I call kind of my inner circle. And I don't mean that in terms of like exclusivity. I don't mean it like that. The inner circle are, you know, fellow writers who are also friends who know me inside and out. Mm-hmm. They know my issues. They know my everything. Mm-hmm. They know personal things about me and my everything, my psyche, mm-hmm. my soul, my, and they are people who lovingly call me on my stuff.
Yes.
who lovingly say, you're slipping into this, you're resorting to that. Good job, Andrea. And they're people who've known me for 3 decades, who know when I'm going through like a personal situation, who will say, don't work on it now, you know, or wow, like pour that into it.
Yeah.
You know? They do it without judgment. And I hope that I extend that same thing to them.
Yeah.
We are in touch constantly. We get together, but by text. I mean, I get these texts at these odd hours. You know, I was thinking about this, this or that. And I sent you an email to suggest that you read this and that.
Those are some serious friends, right? Those are some serious critique partners.
Right.
Because you were first describing the process and you were saying like, you need a dentist to polish. So in my brain, I'm like, these critique partners are dentists. This is formal. But it feels like, the intimacy and the vulnerability that come at this stage to be able to pull you to what you're capable of, it sounds like.
Exactly. Exactly. And that's what we do as writers. You know, we unzip the front of ourselves. You know, we unzip it and say, here it is. Ugh. Here it is. We unzip our hearts. And that's what we want to put on the page. And that's not easy, you know, and I entrust that process to people, you know, where I feel kind of a sense of spiritual and psychological and emotional safety
in
this group. So those would be the hallmarks.
I feel like people don't talk about that piece of it as much, actually, because what you're saying is oftentimes people are looking for people who are strong writers, you know, especially starting out, people who have the technical skills. But I love what you're saying, just that so much of our writing, it's like you're unzipping yourself. You're putting your heart and all of your ish on the page. And it doesn't come out the way that you intended it to. It really takes just exactly what you're saying. Someone who knows your heart, who knows all your stuff, who who you trust implicitly to understand you and know what you're trying to say, to be able to see that in your messy draft.
Yes, in a messy draft.
I think what's really standing out to me is it's not just about the writing skills of somebody who's critiquing your work. It's about how well they understand you and know what you're trying to say, because it doesn't, at least for me, maybe it's different for you. It does not look like that the first 8,000 times it's on the page. I just have a huge moment.
You know, there's that expression, go where it's warm.
Yeah.
And so that's, for me, where the best writing comes out. And again, these are, it's women, you know, it's all women, but these are women who really will say, Andrea, honey, no, no. Mm-hmm.
Andrea, honey.
No, no, darling. No, 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 just not. Just,
and like, I'm like, okay.
You know, and I'm like, okay. Or I will call and say, you know what? I need some good orderly direction here.
Yeah. Yes.
You know, which, by the way, we concluded good orderly direction is G-O-D. You know, so I'm like, all right, okay, I need some good orderly direction.
Ever.
You know,
it makes me wonder, actually, in this context of how you know, then, given that this group well, are people who know you, like, intimately in your heart and soul, how do you know when their feedback is on point for the heart of what you're trying to say? And how do you know when you're like, actually, y'all are off this time? Because part of taking feedback is understanding the difference. And I imagine it might actually be harder when you know people know you, versus when you're like, you just don't get it. You don't know me like that.
Well, I guess the tools and the jewels, you know, that I use, one is just pausing, like, okay, let me not react.
Yep.
Let me just think about this for a minute.
Yeah.
And I usually try to just take it in and try it. Like, okay, let me not dismiss that. Let me try it.
Yeah.
And then I will. To your point, Joanna, I'll go back and say, you know what? Nah, this is me.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
yep.
I am what I am, and I'm keeping that, you know. And I've had good luck with that and not great luck. Review will come out and I'll be like, they told me I didn't listen.
Yeah. It sounds like there's a lot of intuition involved, from the being on the steps and ripping it apart and putting it back together and going back to the computer and finally sharing out with your group. At what point in this process are you able to intuit or otherwise that it's polished, officially done?
Yeah, officially done. Okay. It's never done. It's never done. It isn't. I mean, in my experience, I go back and I read things. I'm like, I wish I could just change this, you know.
Yeah.
But in terms of, yes, okay, hit send, get it to the editor. Reread that first pass. It's just a feeling, you know.
Yeah.
It's the undefinable. For me, it's when I can say, I think I've done my best work here.
Mm-hmm.
At the level at which I'm at psychologically and spiritually with this piece. And when I feel good about it. When I feel good about it.
Yeah.
One quick question on that, because I feel like I've noticed a tendency in myself with my work that I have a nasty habit of tricking myself into thinking I'm done with it, especially if I come up against a part that, like, I feel like maybe is a little hairy. And then I'm like, you know what? No, that's just part of the story. I kind of trick myself into feeling like my best work's out there. Do you delude yourself at all in the process of stopping short of what you're capable of? Or do you feel like you're out of place in your craft? You know the limit you can take something to and should take something to.
Of course I delude myself. Like,
thank
all of
you.
Us, you know, of course.
Andrea, oh, absolutely. I'm going to be so sad.
Absolutely. Completely. Completely. But, you know, then I'm like out and I'm like, that ending.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Endings are hard for me. I'm like, that final button. No.
That's not right.
That final. And, you know, I've handed things in. It's in production and all that. I'm like, And then it will come to me. Sometimes, thankfully, right before, you know, it's going to go. I'm like, oh, no, I got it now. The other thing I'll just mention is that I am a really early riser. So that's when I do my best work and my best polishing and my spreading it all out and all of that. I'm in the pool most mornings before the sun is up. So that's where I do a lot of my kind of polishing when I'm not in front of the laptop or whatever. I'm like, all right, what is that final button? What you're not, no.
Right.
No.
Can we just pause in there in that moment? Because I actually, where I don't say struggle, I feel like where it's very hard is not actually hearing the feedback from me. I love getting feedback because I just know I need help making my stuff better. Where the part that's rough is that moment between, like, I know this feedback is super on point and I have no idea
how to fix it,
to do the thing that I need to do. Are there tips and tricks, or is it sort of, again, just this organic thing where it's like working out in your head how do you go from feedback to like, ah, this is the thing. Uh-huh. That's the key.
Yeah. It's gut. It's gut. Now, what I will say when I'm feeling frustrated and I can't get it and I'm not there yet and all of that, you know, like many of us, I go back and read the greats. I'm like, how's Kate DiCamillo? Like, what's she doing? Let me read her ending. Let me read Renee Watson. Let me read Jacqueline Woods. Let me just, you know, swim around in that and see how, what's Tommy Alexander? What's Joanna Ho? You know, all that. Like, what are no, really, you know, going back and readings. All of us, we writers are readers, essentially. Like, I've just been exploring, really delving into and deconstructing last fall's National Book Award winners. Like, when that was happening, I was really like, let me dive into this.
Ugh, love that.
Me too. I know. So many things. I wanted to sit and talk to you forever.
I know. And I love too how it makes the whole experience of polishing so communal. But it's like you're treating yourself expansively and you're being patient with yourself and you're resisting this pressure-filled urgency. You're creating space to be with people who know you intimately. Then you're creating the spiritual space where you're connecting with the greats. It's like, listen to what resonates and release what doesn't. It feels sparkly and magical, which is how you want polish to feel. That's how you want it to feel at the end of something that you're so proud of.
Yeah. And it can come at any moment. I'll just tell a funny anecdote. So I do have kids. I have a son and a daughter, and they're grown up now. And I think oftentimes too, that it's important to really bring our kids into this process. Mm-hmm. I've had my daughter say, you know, Mom, I was thinking about, it didn't make sense when she walked in and put the keys down. Like, wouldn't she know? I'm like, oh my God, you're right. You know, but anyway, I bring up this all to say, again, they're grownups now. And last holiday season, you get an idea, you write it on anything. So I had a Bounty paper towel. I'm like, this is it. And I'm scrawling it and all of that. And I kind of just leave it out because then I had to rush and go do something. And my son's boyfriend, they were staying here. My son recounted that his boyfriend said, why does your mom write on paper towels? And for Christmas, he bought me like a notepad under the tree. I opened this as a notepad.
That's adorable. And
I asked my son, I said, oh, I love the notepad. He said, yeah, he did ask me like why you're writing on so many paper towels. So you get it how you can get it, you know.
That's so good.
Because of these interviews, I have been so inspired to attempt writing on notebooks and things because I never do that. And I raided my kids' shelf just for like old notebooks and drawing things I save for them. And this is my son's like preschool notebook that I'm like,
it works.
Repurpose it for myself.
Yeah. It's probably a little sturdier than a Bounty paper towel.
Just so much to think about. I feel like sometimes what I hope for from conversations like this is I want someone to give me
a
three-step process for how to figure out the problems in my story. And I can just do that every time. The more I talk to the greats like you, I realize I have to embrace and be patient.
Yes.
And the creative process, like the parts of it that are ineffable, you know, that you can't explain. You just noodle on it and then eventually something comes because you're taking in all these inputs from every possible sphere of your being, which
is
inspiring.
Right. Yeah, okay. And it's often not something I'm doing. It's something I'm not doing.
Right.
It's in the not doing that I'm doing. It seems so counterintuitive, but it's in the inaction that I'm doing it.
Now it just takes us right back to what you said at the beginning, which is like, when I know I'm forcing it, when I'm being urgent, not allowing the inaction to like sprout. Bumps everywhere. Okay, but we're at happy hour and I can't let you go without an overshare. So it could be something funny. It could be embarrassing. It could be serious and personal or infuriating, whatever you feel like sharing related to your career.
Okay. I'm going to overshare a funny and a personal. I'll do the personal one first. Okay. So I was that kid. Like I was that third, fourth, fifth grader who just struggled in school, was kind of always on the outs, you know, that whole thing. And I wrote a story when I was in, I think it was sixth grade, about a man who was made of fire. And when the man would run and propel himself forward, like the flames would get bigger and bigger. But there was a story contest at my school. I didn't enter the contest, but unbeknownst to me, and I don't know who did it. I think it was my teacher who did it. Like my story won the contest. You know? I remember the day of the assembly. I was kind of, again, on the outs, in the corner, not really paying attention. And I was invited in the gym to go to the front. And I remember how is this even possible? I didn't even enter it. And I really think a teacher did. But I tell the story because if you think about kind of the impact of that, like what it was about, like an individual on fire And the fire would grow as the person ran. You know, I look back at that now and it's a syndrome that I've come to call like just anxious apartness. It wouldn't take like a therapist to figure out like, wow, like what was that about? So there's that. And then the funny thing, actually, it's funny, wow. Speaking of running. So I live in New York City and I'm often running for a bus or a subway. And I had an idea in my mind, but I didn't have any paper on me. So I wanted to, and I saw the bus coming and I wanted to run and like catch the bus so I could ask somebody for a piece of paper or whatnot. And I was running so fast, my pants fell down. No kidding. No. My pants fell down.
No.
Yes.
There's your next story.
My pants, and I could feel them kind of going down. It was like sweatpants, like pull-on sweatpants.
Yes.
And they were like falling down. And I'm trying to run for the bus. My pants fell down.
Like around your ankles down?
Close to my knees.
Oh, no. Did you make the bus?
Yes, I did.
Did you? Okay, well.
I made the bus, and I kind of just corrected myself. And I think people noticed, like people were kind of looking at me as I was getting on, like, wow.
You're like, who has paper? They're like,
please. I'm huffing and puffing. You know, it's just so crazy.
And oh, that's so good.
That's just, so good.
Yeah. It's just like, wow. So speaking of urgency, right? I'm running. So that's totally, totally, you know, like against everything. Maybe I learned that lesson that day.
Yeah, I know.
You will literally be caught with your pants down. If you try to go too fast. Like, so don't do it.
I feel like all the New Yorkers were like, well, it's New York.
Another day.
Yeah.
Another day.
Yeah.
That is so funny. Also, the first story, have you ever thought about writing that story about a kid whose teacher submitted a story? Because I like just got full body goosebumps.
Me too.
It's a great, no, I hadn't thought of it. Great idea.
I thought, Carolyn, I thought you were going with turning the fire runner into a story.
Yeah.
Like I would love to see
it. Oh, at all. The whole thing. The whole thing. I just, it's such a moving, it's such a moving visual that someone, this mysterious person was advocating for you in this way and that you just were right in it. And I can only imagine what it felt like for you to hear your name. And it just went against the whole story you had of self. It's just so beautiful.
It was so crazy. And I remember walking up with my head down. Like, I can't believe this is happening. And the prize was for the sixth grade, whatever, story contest, was that I got a gift certificate. I got to take my whole family out to dinner at the Red Lobster restaurant.
Oh,
so can you imagine, you know, like you're in sixth grade and we get to go out at the Red Lobster because of this story that I have no idea how it was submitted to this little elementary school contest. Anyway, so
that is beautiful.
I hope that teacher, whoever it is, knows what you do now.
I know. And that you're sharing that the impact that had.
I know.
An anonymous angel.
Yeah.
Oh, I love that. Beautiful. That's beautiful. Oh, this was such a wonderful conversation. I just want to go polish all the things now.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Yes.
Thank you so much for joining us today. It really was such a beautiful.
Just what I needed to hear. Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you both.
If you enjoy this podcast, we would be so grateful if you would please take a moment to do any or all of the following things.
Follow or subscribe by tapping on the little plus sign or follow next to Kidlet Happy Hour in Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen.
And while you're there, we would love if you could leave a rating, preferably one with 5 stars, as well as a review.
And don't forget about Patreon, where you can help support production costs, ask us questions, get even more overshares, and receive a delicious thank you treat from JK Chocolate. Check out patreon.com/KidletHappyHourPodcast.
Thank you so much for being here, and we hope to see you back for the next episode.